anxiety really did attack. And so people had anxiety attacks. And I did this whole thing on guilt is something that you have to have on this planet, because it allows you, when you get so much of it, to go into rewind, and then you get to do it over, and so guilt sends you back and gets you to do things over. And then this lady, Icus, this divine being, comes to Earth, and of course, she can't figure out why people are neurotic by choice when anxiety doesn't really attack. And being guilty doesn't allow you to go into rewind, and all of these things. And it was just sort of my little satire, just another way of presenting the message. And this is what really got me started on this path. And then she goes back to Uranus, but before she goes, she leaves with the secrets of the universe, these great secrets. And there are 17 of them, and I wrote about each one of them. And she says, as she is leaving, you have a choice to either adopt these and make your world work, or to, to live the neurotic life that you're continuing. And then I was going to summarize the book, and I was going to call the book the title, which was going to be that last punchline, which was, if you want to be happy, get your head out of Uranus, which... and I had a wonderful picture for the cover of the book. I had a drawing, I had... a yoga master who had posed for it, and it was, and that was my idea, and it was really just sort of a joke, just a fun thing that I was going to do. And it turned out that people bought it, and it was very successful, and everybody took it very seriously, and so after that, I got into this area of, I had written a book about raising children, and then I began to look at my own life in a kind of a different way, and where I was going, what I wanted for myself, and what was happening in my relationships and so on. And I wrote this book called You'll See It When You Believe It. And I couldn't get it published. I mean, I had written books that had all been huge bestsellers, and publishers were always anxious to take anything that I had written and so on. And yet my publisher, when they read that, they said, no, this is not a direction that we're going in. This is not something that the world is going to accept. It's too far out there. It's too weird. And so I went to another, a different publisher. And I changed publishers, went to William Morrow. And I did it without an advance, which is probably not a big deal to you. But when you've got eight kids, it's a very big deal. And this is how you make a living. And paid for it all myself and put the whole thing together. And then they got behind it. I had a wonderful editor. And then that really got me going on this journey of looking at these principles, these spiritual principles that that this church stands for and has stood for as long as I have been associated with it, which goes back to 1975, when it was just a little classroom over on the east side of Detroit at Regina High School. When Jack asked me if he could make a tape series based upon your erroneous sounds, which a lot of people thought was a sex book. In fact, my agent did not want me to write You'll See It When You Believe It. He wanted me to write a sex book. And a lot of people thought I already had done that, you know, with erroneous sounds. And I remember going into a bookstore in Des Moines, Iowa, and seeing my picture in that little paperback in the middle of all the rest of the pornographic books. And this whole section of books, you know. Do Me, Do Me, Do Me, and Debbie Does Dallas. And The Pizza Man Always Delivers, I think, was one of them. And there was my little face in your erroneous sounds right in the middle of all of that. But I didn't want to write that, and I didn't want to write a business book, and I didn't want to write a diet book. I wanted to have my writing reflect what was happening with me in my life. And that was, of course, followed by Real Magic, which was sort of taking on this idea of being able to create miracles in our lives. And then Your Sacred Self, which was really my effort to write about the triumph of the higher or the sacred part of us over the ego, and I'll talk somewhat about that today. But then, of course, the question always is for the left brain and for the ego part of us, what's next? Where are you going? What are you going to do now? Are you going to retire? Are you going to stop writing? Have you said everything that you know? And so on. And then magical things always seem to happen when you let go and you let God into your life. And you stop questioning and you stop demanding and you stop insisting and you surrender. And in this process of doing that, whatever it is that you need to do on your journey will become very evident to you. And the right people will start to show up and the right things will be there for you and the financing will be there and all of that. All of that seems to work. And I, in the process of preparing for your sacred self, I read some spiritual literature. I immersed myself in A Course in Miracles. And I read Madame Blavatsky, who was very influential for a lot of writers of the 20th century. A Russian lady who lived in the last century predicted that there would be an incredibly revolutionary experience, a revolution, if you will, on the planet that would transcend any of the revolutions that had ever occurred before. It would make the agricultural revolution and the Renaissance and the industrial revolution and even the technological and informational revolution, all of which she predicted, dwarfed by comparison with this spiritual revolution that would be ushered in the last 25 years of the millennium and in the first 11 years of the next millennium, is what she said in the Secret Doctrine. And she said the leaders of this revolution would not be people in power, but indeed would come out of the masses. They would be school teachers, they would be singers, they would be dancers, they would be physicians, they would be attorneys, they would be lawyers and people who just regular folks, cab drivers, whatever, who would, and the groundswell would come from within, and then the leadership would begin to get it, rather than the other way around. And that, I think about that and what Madame Blavatsky said when I read this. And when I wrote Erroneous Zones in 1975, I had never heard of Madame Blavatsky, nor read any of her work. And I thought about the changes, the shifts that have taken place on the planet, you know. And I don't want to take the time to go into all of them, but, you know, the dismantling of the Soviet Union and the apartheid and all of the kinds of changes, the really dramatic changes that I've talked about here before, which if anybody would have tried to predict 10 or 15 years ago, they would have been laughed at. You know, that there would be a man in prison and who would probably become the man of the century in South Africa, who wasn't even allowed to be photographed and had no visitors for over a quarter of a century. And he would not only be released, but he would become the democratically elected president of a black-white coalition government in South Africa. Just absolutely unheard of. And this was just like a speck ago. This is just a moment ago. Because one of the great teachings, I think, that we have to understand in our own lives and collectively is that there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And when that idea is there and it's present and it's fluid and it's allowed to flow, then nothing can stop it. And then I take a look at these changes, these shifts that have taken place and what Madame Blavatsky talked about. And in reading her work, I think about who have been the spokespeople. I'm always amused in election years when the people who are running for the higher offices proclaim themselves to be our leaders and act as if they really are the ones who are leading us. And I am, and all the commercials are a leader for our times, and this is the person that's leading us. And I always wonder where they ever got the idea that they were the leaders, because they just happened to be in an elective office. It's sort of like if you had a nice home and you had people that you hired to come in and help you out with it and take care of it.